Hello everyone, here is Daniel Badai with another episode of our Ecom show, and today I'm here with Brian Rosenthal. He's from Buenos Aires, Argentina, and he is the CEO of an e-commerce PPC agency, BSR Digital. You can check out our website, bsrdigital.com. And I got connected with Brian through a great agency mastermind a few months ago. And we started discussing fashion and apparel e-commerce because almost all of his clients, they are in these industries. And my company as well, I would say around 60% of our clients, they are in these two niches. But they are on the acquisition side and we are on the retention side. So naturally, I got interested to talk to him. And it's good to have you here today, Brian.
Hey, my pleasure to be here, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with some personal background. Please tell us more. How did you end up in this crazy agency world?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was like anybody else or almost anybody else by accident. I come from the background of computer science. So I used to work as a software developer for a software factory. It was a US-based company. And then in the 2008 recession, they closed their doors, as many other companies in the US. So we started with some people there, our own venture, so keeping the software development work for some clients. And then over time, 2010, I opened my first software factory. And in that factory, we over time developed our own software and we raised capital and we started our own startup, let's say. Mm-hmm. I don't know, 40 plus people working for that company. It was a super fun time. And then by then, it was probably the boom of social media, you know, 2011 or more or less. Everyone wanted to grow their organic presence online. They gave away trucks, cars, and all crazy stuff for getting fans or followers back then. Not even Instagram was there yet. It was Facebook. And then we opened up in parallel to the startup an agency, mainly focused on organic marketing. Over time, with my background, I couldn't stand only telling my clients that the results we were bringing for them were likes and shares. That's pretty valid and even more for the time. But I felt that I needed to bring them business results. And long story short, that's how we then shifted the company's goals and clients to provide them with actionable results for them, whether it's leads or sales in their e-commerce.
Okay, so actually your current agency and company, is it the same entity as it was back then? And you just transformed it into an agency?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it actually was probably it's two different agencies. I started the first one in 2013. It was a different name, different clients. And then over time, we shifted to the agency we are today. Basically, we rebranded the agency. We changed some of the team members. Some of the team members are the same. Same with the clients. So yeah, it was like kind of two stages. But then around 3 years ago, we started with a total new approach.
Yeah, reason why I was asking, because I can see agencies transform into a software company or they launch a software company, but I can rarely see the opposite, that somebody starts as a software company and startup and they transform into an agency. I think that's more rare.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't intentional at all. It was more of the needs we identified in the market back then, that when we had the startup, the sales force was recognizing that there were a lot of opportunities that they couldn't actually, we couldn't offer them anything in return with the startup. But then we decided to open the agency with a partner. And then when I exited the startup, I went to work to the agency. And then I got in love with the marketing world. And that's when I probably shifted entirely from the tech world to the marketing world. But there's still a lot of tech and science to the marketing or to the performance marketing, at least. So that's why I'm comfortable there.
Yeah, that's definitely. It's a very analytical area, I would say, performance marketing. And nowadays you focus on US clients, fashion and apparel, right? And I'm just curious why you decided to focus on these brands, especially fashion and apparel, not other niches.
Yeah, I personally love the industry. I have a lot of experience working with those type of companies, and it felt easy or easier to help them. We have worked and we currently work with a variety of industries, but the vast majority of our clients are from that space. And there are a lot of specific things that makes it different from probably other industries. I don't know. The AOV is much lower than, I don't know, a furniture store or a different category, but it's not as cheap as, I don't know. We have worked as well in the beauty industry. And if they do, I don't know, beauty subscription. Yeah. If you have to subscribe for a product every month, probably it's $20 or $9. So probably you don't make the money up front and it's on the back end. And with the recurring, it's more about the lifetime value than the ROAS. And so it's a different conversation there. But with Apparel and Fashion, we have helped so many right now that, yeah, we feel comfortable there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just had a conversation with a friend of mine and he's a business partner. They have a company in the hair care industry. And I asked them if they started a fashion brand. And the guy told me that never, because it's just so competitive. I think he used the word rat race. It's just a rat race and or like a hamster wheel. And also that it's complicated, the operations, because there are different colors, different sizes, and he doesn't want to deal with that. So what are your thoughts on the fashion and apparel industry in general compared to beauty or even furniture? You mentioned jewelry or any other industries. How can someone stick there? Because it's really competitive indeed.
Yeah, definitely. You have a point, and every industry is competitive, and you need to find a way to stand out. The other day, on my podcast, I interviewed someone in the supplement industry, and they needed to build a lab to actually build the products they actually or to manufacture products they then sell. For the apparel and fashion, you need to have your own, you know, shop as well, manufacture your own things. So every single industry has their own complexities. I mean, if we talk about the furniture or the decor industry as well, they need to produce all those things. So let me give you an example of one of it's a former client of mine that actually will be clarifying for this. What they sold was phone cases. So when you hear about that, it's like, hey, they don't have any chance to succeed online because it's like, it's a phone case. You can get a phone case everywhere. You can get a shirt or a t-shirt or whatever everywhere. The same with beauty, the same with apparel. But what they did, it's the same way that we suggest to every single customer. They did it on their own even before started working with us. And it's great. They didn't think of their product as the end goal, but as the vehicle for their target audience to achieve their goals. So instead of selling phone cases, they sold the solution for new moms to take a picture of their babies staring at the camera, because their designs were actually grabbing babies' attention to the phone case. And then you were able, and I have 3-year-old twins, so I know that as a parent, it's really when they are babies to take a look at them staring at the camera, they look away all the time. So if you're a new mom or a new parent, and if you use one of those phone cases, you get the baby to look at the camera and you can get pictures of them, and those memories are priceless. So they said, hey, we are not selling phone cases. We are selling the opportunity for you to take a picture of your baby looking at the camera. And you do that through our vehicle, which is our phone case. So moms were going crazy. So the trick is that, again, they found a unique angle for a well-defined audience. And that's what made them stand out in a very red ocean, which is the phone case market, right?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I really like this example because the phone cases industry is also really competitive. I know just here in Hungary, in my country, I know many, many companies doing that. And their sizes are really different depending on how well they can differentiate themselves. So, yeah, I talked to a Swedish company and they sell white t-shirts. And you can literally buy white t-shirts anywhere for like, I don't know, $3 maybe in H&M. But still, they sell it for like 20, 30, 40 bucks. So they are really smart. They didn't even have email marketing. That's why we had the talk, I remember.
Yeah, so there are always ways to differentiate from the competitors, but I think the common denominators for the successful companies in those industries are those. It's like how to stand out, great imagery, of course, great marketing, all stuff, but the basis is like having a great offer for a well-defined audience that makes you stand out and not trying to sell. Well, that probably white t-shirt example is an exception, but it's really hard unless they are made out of sustainable fabrics. So probably it's one angle, because now brands with a purpose are probably the brands that we are seeing right now. And customers don't only care about buying products. They care about standing for something, or the brand they buy from, that they stand for something, and they, I don't know, collaborate with other influencers or personalities, or they keep them in mind in the loop for the product manufacturing. So some companies I have worked with, for example, they keep their top clients in the loop before even they start selling a product. So before releasing a product to market, they actually send them samples so they can get feedback and adjust before releasing the products to the public, and so on. So there are many ways to keep people engaged and stand out. But definitely, if you want to be the brand that sells the same thing that everyone sells without any, let's say, attributes, it will be tough.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and actually, I think you said correct. This white t-shirt company, their fabric was actually some sustainable material. So that was their unique proposition. And you mentioned that ideally they should manufacture the products, so D2C, direct to consumer. Do you think dropshipping is dead here? Or you know, working with a manufacturer who makes the product and you just sell it? Is it not a viable option nowadays in fashion?
I don't know if I can answer that directly. I would say that we try to stay away from dropshipping companies, because it's the margins in general, the margins are pretty, pretty low. It's really hard to get started unless you are well established. There are many dropshipping stores. If you're getting started, it's really tough. I think the pandemic probably changed a lot of things, the supply chain. I mean, companies, even the biggest companies in the world, are having issues with the supply chain and inventory. So I don't know how it's going to be easier for dropshipping stores. But yeah, I don't know if they are dead. I think that there are opportunities for everyone. I don't know if the concept is dead. I think that many people think that it's really easy to get started and underestimate the fact that since they don't have to manufacture the whole thing, it's going to be a quick win. And it's not. They are going to create, I don't know, a Shopify or whatever platform store, and then they are going to publish things, leverage the existing reviews, imagery, and all the stuff, and then it will be a success overnight. And probably it's not how it works, right? As I said, with a phone company, same thing. You got to build a brand. You got to stand for something. You can start theirs, and then you can manufacture your own products. Many companies start that way, so there's nothing wrong with that. They need to care about all the rest of the process. Otherwise, it won't work.
Yeah, I agree. And I think in the last 2 years, I don't remember any successful dropshipping fashion companies. I know one footwear company who are pretty successful. It's a 7-figure e-commerce store with a pretty lean team. But it's a footwear company, so it's not clothing, not as much, not really fashion. Yeah. And also they have a very specific audience, so older women who have problems with their feet. So really, it's almost like a medical shoe, let's say. So it's very specific. But other than that, I don't remember any who I could see. So let's talk about third-party data. And this is really interesting, because probably 2 years ago, I think Facebook was relatively easy, or let's say easier than nowadays, I would say. And then we had the iOS changes. And it affected not just Facebook, but also email and many different channels. But probably Facebook was the area where most businesses, they really felt the influence or the effect of the iOS changes. And nowadays, I can see that zero-party data, first-party data is really pushed and advertised by companies that this is the future, owning the data and having a subscriber base and an audience. But still, third-party data is here. It just changed how it is used. So what could you see in the last 1 year and where we are going with third-party data now?
Yeah, that's a great question and very interesting topic, because it's something we are going through right now as we speak, I mean, in the industry. So I'll start by saying really quick, things have changed Right, not even after iOS, even before. I believe it was 2018. Please correct me if I'm wrong. The algorithm changed, and probably the organic reach for businesses wasn't the same as before. So that was the first hit for companies. Then, of course, the advertising was still fairly easy. But then, of course, iOS 14 hit and everything started to be more difficult, right? We have had things easy and now we can see that, right? And it's not enough, as you said, with what used to work before. Then that was not the only change. I mean, earlier this year, Facebook has removed a lot of interest. They started saying that it was going to be religion-related interests only, but then they started removing a lot of things. Audiences got smaller naturally due to iOS, plus this interest thing. So everything changed, and it's really, really important. I'm with you to collect the data and the first-party data, zero-party data. I mean, everything is really important. The thing is, how do you get there? I mean, if you have your first-party data already built, that's great. Otherwise, I mean, I think it's a constant thing you need to build, you know, but how do you get there? And I think that in life, in business, and why not when talking about Facebook ads, you need to leverage other people's success to get yours as well faster. That's why there are mergers and acquisitions, because people want to buy companies that are already successful, partnerships, all stuff, because that's the faster way to grow. In this case, it's the same. Somebody else, let's say has or owns or whatever your audience or your audience data, why not leveraging that? So when you want to grow a company, you can start by, of course, targeting them with interests, lookalikes. You can retarget existing visitors, engagers, lists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then you can take things to a whole different level. So, for example, what happens if you wanted to get an influencer to promote your brand? What do typically companies do, Daniel? They will go reach out to the influencer directly or through an agency, and the influencer will do what?
I don't say it's ideal, but most people they do this. So they post a random, Instagram post or maybe a few times, some coupon code. Many times even the caption is really promotional. This is a paid promotion with this brand, and I don't know, it's just bad.
Yeah, and that's great. But what if you could take this to the next level? For example, what if you could ask them, of course, to their benefit as well, there should be something in the back end to share their pixel. They have a pixel for sure. They have a website, they have offers, they have things they offer to the audience. Why don't we ask them to share their pixel with us? By the way, for those listening, what that will allow you as a brand to do is to get their audience. So you will be able to target everyone that was pixeled by them, by Facebook. So, for example, their website visitors, their leads, their previous buyers, their engagers, everyone that is in their pixel will be now in yours after you target them. And even if it's not in yours then, I mean, now you can still target them as long as they share their pixel with you. So not many brands are doing this, and they say, "Oh, I'm partnering with this guy and this one and this," and they are doing nothing else with that. So what if you could give them something in return? It's not only a win for you. It's like, hey, everyone buying, if you give me your pixel, I'll use it only for, I don't know, to create audiences that will go in specific ad sets, and then in those I will include your ads, right? Not your competitors' ads or other influencers. Like, or I will promote my stuff without you there, but I'll give you with a code I will include there. I'll give you, you know, a fee for each purchase I get from you, right? So many people do that with the codes with influencers, but without the pixel, right? And what changes here is that you get their data, you leverage their data. And that's gold because you reach an audience just like that, because that influencer allegedly has your audience, right? There are some other ways to leverage third-party data. I mean, you can buy not only, I mean, on Facebook, you can target people by interests, let's say. But what if you can target people by behaviors? I mean, I'm not talking about Facebook behaviors. I mean, there are plenty of platforms to actually buy credit card information based on specific previous consumption. So I don't know, in certain industries or certain brands. So if you want people that bought in the last month or so from, I don't know, X brand, you can target those people. You can build an audience out of those people. You can build an audience around many other criteria buying those. There are some other ways. There are tools that will allow you to target Facebook group members, followers of Instagram profiles. So there are actually many things out there that you need to test. Will all of them work? No, of course not. You need, same as the audiences on Facebook or Google or any platform, you need to test what will work for you. But this is an option to actually fish in a different pond because you're fishing on Facebook, let's say, or on Google, but not everyone hangs out there. So what if someone is not there and you can actually target them? Yeah, I want to stop here for a sec, but this is more or less what this is about.
Yeah, I think the data exchange is a really good idea, not just for pixels, but email list or any kind of data that you have and share it with your influencers. And this reminds me to something, which is, this is less about data, what I will say here. So we had a guest here in the podcast. I think it was one of the first episodes almost 2 years ago. And there was a guy, I think his name is Andy. He's from Australia, the founder of Bossel, which is a watch brand in Australia. And he's a guy who has he's very clear about his intentions and what he wants to achieve with his brand. And he has a few ambassadors. They call them ambassadors, not really influencers or influencer marketing. And they have only a few of them, like three or four. And they are usually actresses or actors who are well known in Australia. I think they even have some equity in the company. So probably most people, they don't want that. But I really admire that, you know, he's really clear about his intentions. And it's not just about data exchange or promotions. It's not as superficial or tactical, you know, what most brands they do. But it's very, it's more like, it's almost like, let's say, Victoria's Secrets. They have, I think, 20 or 30 models maximum. And once you become a Victoria's Secret model, it's a big thing for you. So they have these ambassadors. So the philosophy is something similar. And I really like this approach. You know, they partner up with these famous people on a very serious level. And I think it's more strategical, not just about promotions, what most brands do. It's just another layer, I think.
Some of our clients, what they do, for example, is to feature independent artists. So they designed their own apparel line around, I don't know, one client is, they are targeting surfers and all those people. So they have designers and they do their line and they feature them with their own profile, story, products. So it's more about them than about the own products they sell, right? And it shouldn't necessarily be a marketplace. I mean, always, it could be, like you can have edits, you know. So we work with another client in the fashion industry, and they do edits. So they get a huge influencer, and they say, "Hey, we are going to do a collection around you." And many brands do that, right? So it'll be a collection about Daniel. So you have your own photo shoots. All the ads are about you. The website is about you. So you have your own landing page. So people love that. People nowadays buy experiences. They don't buy products.
I agree. I have one more topic for you today. So let's talk about when to become omnipresent. And I'm really curious, when you start working with clients, do they already do SEO, Google Ads, email marketing, SMS, different things? Or they just start out with Facebook, they want to scale with that further, they reach out to you, and then they become omnipresent later when they scale? What's the typical pattern?
Yeah, there's a mix depending on their stage they are at when they come to work with us. But yeah, in terms of when, I'm trying to think of the best answer. I don't know if there's a rule of thumb, but I think that first, you should, of course, validate your offer and your business model. And once you're way past that point, you know, people want what you offer, you know, people are willing to pay what you ask for, and you know your audience pretty well, then you will start to naturally identify those channels that you need to be present. Talking about paid ads, I'm talking about, as you said, SEO. I think it's pretty important for brands to be omnipresent, because if we think as every channel as bubbles with people, you will reach different bubbles and you won't find everyone in one bubble. You will need to reach multiple bubbles in order to find their audience, because there are plenty of people hanging out on Facebook or on Instagram. Yes, but there are many, I don't know, my wife, for example, it's not common for her to perform Google search. Her search engine is Instagram. If she wants to buy something, she goes to Instagram. Some people go to Amazon, some people go to Google, some people go to eBay. Different people use different things. So if you're only staying, not starting out, but if you're only staying for the long run on one, you're missing out a lot of opportunities. So yeah, of course, you should leverage for acquisition certain channels and then retention different channels. So yeah, for sure, you need to be omnipresent. In terms of when, it's when you feel it's the right time to take the next step. If you're starting out, I don't know how many people are going to be in your email list, but you should start building one. How many phone numbers you will have to reach them out through SMS. But again, you should start building one. But then as you grow, you will find it natural to say, oh, I have a decent size right now to do X, Y, or Z, etc. And in terms of paid ads, I always tell my clients that they should start small in one platform and avoid diluting the budget across multiple platforms. I always tell them the same thing. Even Facebook, huge company nowadays for many, many years, over a decade now, they started in the campus, you know? So if they start small, why couldn't you? They come and say, oh, with a budget of, I don't know, $10,000, I want to be in 10 countries, 10 platforms. And it's like, okay, wait. Who are you? Wait a sec. Let's try to make the most out of your budget on one platform. Let's try to learn faster and to leverage the budget here. And then there's always time to expand. Once we make this work, we'll say, okay, we can go to the next one, to the next one, to the next one. And we have clients, I don't know, they do, I don't know, 5 paid ad platforms. And they are doing great in many of them and testing new ones all the time. And they try to find new ways to keep growing. But they should start small. Yeah,
makes sense. Thanks, Brian. It was a really interesting conversation today. And thanks everyone who listened to us today, the live stream or later the podcast. Brian, if anyone wants to find you and your agency, where they should go?
Yeah, the easiest probably is bsrdigital.com. That's our website. They will find everything we do, video case studies, and many great things about us. And then on LinkedIn, probably my name and last name will be hard to type in. So probably if there are some written resources, then that would be great. Otherwise, it's in LinkedIn. You can find me with my name and last name, here in the screen, Brian Roisenthal. You will find me there.
Yeah, and of course, we will put the links into the description so everyone can find you. Sometimes I struggle with the same problem. Sometimes I'm not Budai, but Dubai. So it happens. And thanks again for coming, and thanks everyone who listened to us today. Stay tuned, because every week we come with 2 episodes nowadays. So thanks again and have a great day.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.